All right, let's open up to Romans 15. Finished up Romans 14 last week. Just going to keep on moving. So we've been in this section on Romans 14 with Liberty for a while, and wanted to continue on with these instructions. And the stuff that Nathan was talking about is really going to be applicable, because this really is about love. This whole conversation with Liberty is really about love. Remember what we talked about with Liberty, that there are things, a lot of things in the Christian life that God doesn't necessarily give a thus saith the Lord on. There's areas of freedom that we have the opportunity to engage in or not to engage in. And the purpose of that freedom is to make sure that, number one, we serve the Lord, and number two, we serve others. So when we see how Jesus used his freedom, he used it to serve others. When we see how Paul used his freedom, he used it to serve others, to serve the Lord. So it's not about how we please ourselves. And our culture, our society, really is very self-centered. It's really about, you know, what makes me happy, you know, what fulfills me. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to have some self-satisfaction and self-fulfillment. That's all good stuff. I mean, God wants us to have a life that is fulfilling. But when we understand it properly, we get fulfilled by fulfilling our purpose, by fulfilling the reason we're here. And every single Christian on the face of the earth, we are here to serve the Lord and each other and the lost. Nothing will make us happier with a proper understanding than fulfilling that. So liberty is not just necessarily about the things I get to do because I want to do them. It's how can I serve others? So we're going to be in the first three verses of chapter 15 today, where he says, "Now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength, and not just please ourselves. Each of us is to please his neighbor for his good, to his edification. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me." Now, this is a really interesting concept. Paul is not necessarily changing gears a whole lot. It's not like, okay, we're done talking about liberty and now we're going to move on to something else. No, this is part of the entire conversation of chapter 14. Now, he is starting to wrap up the book, because as we get later on into the chapter, we're going to see that he is taking points from earlier in the book and bringing them back out and applying them so that we can have a nice bow on top of the book of Romans. So the first word in the Greek in verse 1 is the word ought. That's the first word in word order. Now, in my New American Standard, it's the sixth word. "Now we who are strong ought to bear the witness." So the force of the verse is that word ought. What does that mean? Well, in English, it means something you should do. It's something you're supposed to do. You ought to do this. Now, in the Greek, it has a little bit more force than that. In the Greek, it means something that you are obliged morally to do. It has more force. So what Paul is saying here is that this is something that there is a moral requirement for you to engage in as a Christian. So anytime you see that word ought in the New Testament, pay attention. Pay attention. Now, there's a couple different words that could be translated that way, but this one has that obligation associated with it. What are we obliged to do? Well, he's talking to the strong ones. He's talking to the strong ones. And he's telling the strong folks, you have a moral obligation to bear the weaknesses of those without strength. Now, I'm not sure how some of y'all's versions translate that, but basically, you've got the word strong, and then the word weak, and it's essentially the same root word, but the word weak has the negative particle alpha on the front of it, meaning without. Like, you know, we have the word theist, someone who believes in God, and then we have the word atheist, someone who doesn't believe in God. It doesn't always follow through. You have the word agnostic, right? Which means without knowledge. They don't know if there's a God. Does that mean the person who believes in the God is a Gnostic? We don't use it that way. Gnostic has really bad connotations in the Bible. Or the concept of Gnosticism does. But you get the point. You put that negative particle on the front of it, the A, and it means without. That's what you have here. Strong. It's the word, I can't remember, dunamai, dunamis, duna something. We get the word dynamite from it. It's power, ability. And then you've got the negative particle, so it's without that power and ability. So you've got two people. One who's strong, one who's weak. One who has power and ability, another person doesn't have that power and ability. Now what's interesting is we know exactly who he's talking about here. Let's go back to chapter 14. This is so important. We always have to remember something, and sometimes I think this gets missed. Sometimes we look at verses in isolation to each from each other, don't we? We read of it's not necessarily our fault because we have chapter divisions, we have verse divisions, and so sometimes if you're reading, you know, you might stop at the end of chapter 14, and then you might pick up on verse 1 in chapter 15, and you read it like it's a separate train of thought. Like he's talking about something completely different. But remember, when this was written, there were no verses. There were no chapters. Those didn't get added till much later, simply as a means of referencing. Because, if we all had scrolls of Romans in front of us, and I said, okay, open up to Romans, about, 85% of the way through. Okay, so we're all rolling the scrolls out, re-roll. See, now we can just say, go to Romans 15:1. And you can get right there. So it's a way to find our way around. But back at chapter 14 is where we have these words again. Verse 1. Now accept the one who is weak in faith, not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. One person has faith that he may eat all things. One who is weak eats vegetables only. It's the same word for weak there. In verses 1 and 2 of 14, as there is in verse 1 of 15. So what Paul is trying to say is, remember the concept that we had back then. What Paul's trying to say is this. You person that believes you can eat all things, don't judge or view with contempt. Let me use the right word. Don't view with contempt the person who believes that they can't eat all things. Again, meat sacrificed to idols. But you weak person, don't judge the person who thinks that they can eat all things. So he's giving explicit commands to the weak and to the strong. And they're both not to look at each other negatively based upon what they approve. So a strong person, someone who's strong in faith, they can probably handle that, right? Tell you what, I've been around a while. This is a person strong in faith talking. Been around a while. I see this individual. They believe they can't eat anything, meat sacrificed to idols. I know that I can. I'm absolutely not going to view them with contempt. I'm going to be gentle with them. I'm going to accept them. I'm going to love them. But a person who's weak in faith, by definition, might not do the thing that the apostle tells them to do, right? Why? Because they're weak in faith. People who are weak in faith don't always do the right things. Maybe they're young in the faith, maybe they're not building their faith, whatever the case is. And so that person who's weak in faith, still, even though the apostle says not to, they still might view that person who's strong, thinks they can eat everything, and they still might judge him. So now what Paul is saying is, what do you do now? You've got someone who's weak in faith. They can't handle it. Maybe they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. How are you supposed to handle it? What's Paul say? Bear their weakness. That word for bear means to carry. So think about how unfair this looks on the outside. The strong person is doing what they're supposed to be doing, and now they're being told to carry the bad thing that the person weak in faith is doing. That's totally unfair, isn't it? I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and now I'm supposed to help them do when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to go in there and help them? Yes. Yes. Oh, man, if I had known that about Christianity, maybe I would have come up with a different purpose in life. Let's dive into this a little bit. This is where it gets a little bit messy and sticky for people. But this is where we really get to excel. That word for without strength is very interesting. It means impossible or inability. In other words, something that they don't have the ability to do or something that's impossible for them. Wait a second. I thought for the Christian, all things are possible through Christ who strengthens me. That there's nothing impossible for the Christian. Haven't we been preaching that? Haven't we been told that? Doesn't the Bible say that? Yes, it does. So why in the world would Paul say that you who are strong are to bear the weakness of a person who doesn't have the ability to do something or it's impossible for them to do it? What in the world is it impossible? How can they not do it? You probably know where I'm going with this. According to 1 John chapter 5, what is it that we possess that overcomes the world? Shout it out. Our faith. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. If we've got what the size of a mustard seed, what can we can move mountains. What is that little thing that we have? Faith. So this person who's weak, what is it that they don't have? Faith. Can they do it without faith? No. If we can take a mountain and throw it into the heart of the sea, if we have faith and can overcome the world and have overcome the world, if a person doesn't have faith, it's impossible. What Paul is talking about here is someone who hasn't grown in their faith and doesn't have the ability to do this yet. So what is a Christian, a stronger Christian, supposed to do in the face of someone where you're doing what you're supposed to do, but they don't have the faith to do it yet? Are you just supposed to say, tough luck for you? No. Not at all. We are supposed to bear that weakness. And man, isn't that just a bummer? Isn't that just unfair? That God is telling me that I got to carry their weakness too, along with my responsibility. Well, that's the other part, right? Yeah. Until they get to believe, until they grow in faith and can carry their own. But really, if you had to boil Christianity down as far as one of the ways that we can really serve, Isn't that one of them? Isn't that probably the best example? I mean, think about it. Even a lot of people in the world, if you carry your weight, I'll carry my weight. If you do what you're supposed to do, I'll do what I'm supposed to do. Isn't that how relationships in the world work? Why is it that so many relationships fall apart? Well, they just weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing anymore. So I'm not going to do what I said I was going to do. Last time I checked, in marriage, better, worse, richer, poorer, sickness, health. Jeremiah, when you do weddings now, do you still do those types of vows typically? But same vows, right? Time of abundance, time of need. Okay.
Okay.
So, and they say I do, right? And how many are still married? About half? Okay. About half. So, did they really mean it? Probably not. Probably not. Folks, my point is this. There is nothing more Christ-like that we can do than do our job and then pick up somebody else's slack too. And to not punish them for it is the other part of that. I'll pick it up, but I'm going to let you know all about it all the time. And I'm going to keep on reminding you about that time that I had to pick up your slack because you weren't doing your job. You want to kill a marriage? Do that. It'll kill any relationship that you're in. Remember what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the famous wedding chapter that Jeremiah has memorized in multiple versions probably. Does love keep a record of wrong? No, it doesn't. Does love remind you of your mistakes every time you turn around? No, it doesn't. Now, notice one other thing before we move on to verse number 3. All right, we're finish up verse number 2. Notice he says, we're to bear the weakness of those without strength and not just please ourselves. How does ESV read there? Does it say not just please ourselves? Verse 1. End of verse 1. Not please ourselves. Okay, it doesn't have the word just. See, New American Standard has that word just there, and I don't like it. It's in italics. It's not there. ESV does a much better job translating that verse. We're to please others and not please ourselves. That's what the verse really says. Keep your finger there and turn over to Philippians chapter 2, because the same type of weird translation in the New American Standard is there, and it blunts the force of the verse. Verse 3, Philippians 2:3 says, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. And New American Standard says, do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. But literally, it's do not look out for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. Now, maybe merely is a little bit implied there. But my point is, he's not saying, okay, I could look out for my own interests as long as I'm looking out for yours. No, that's not what he's saying. The purpose of our life is not to please ourselves. The purpose of our life is to serve others. It's to serve the Lord. Purpose of our lives isn't to be lazy. The purpose of our lives is to excel even more in work. Now look at verse 2. Each of us is to please his neighbor for his own good, to his edification. I love the way Paul and God clarifies this for us. Now, by the way, that word for please is an imperative in the Greek. It's a command. It doesn't look like that in the English, but it's an imperative. It's a command. And notice it doesn't say we're just supposed to please our neighbor. Imagine the abuses there. your neighbor says, "Well, tell you what, I'm tired of my house. I need more space. I want your house too." And the Bible says you're supposed to please me. That would please me. Okay, well, I guess I have to give you my house now. No, not like that. You're supposed to please him for his good, for his edification. In other words, who gets to define it? God does. It doesn't mean that we're everybody's doormat. It means that what we're supposed to do in our serving of each other is supposed to lead them to the good of God and for their edification, for their building up in the faith. That's the caveat. Now, you want to get to the real motivation and heart and example of this issue? Because, again, we could say, oh, this kind of stinks. That I have to bear my burden and theirs. It's one thing if they're trying and they can't and they're struggling to do it. But if they just refuse to do it and they don't do it, I'm still supposed to bear their burden? Yes. You want to see the example that he gives? Verse 3. For even Christ did not please himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell upon me. Let's break that apart a little bit, shall we? Did Christ please himself? Yeah, I think he really wanted an excursion out of the courts and glory and majesty of heaven down to this place, suffer unimaginably, be tortured and die for the sins of the world because he was bored? Wasn't quite right in the head, maybe? He did it so that the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. He did it so that the reproaches of those, you know what a reproach is? It's an insult. It's a blasphemy. They're words of violence and offense. He did it so that the reproaches, that the violence, the offense that mankind has done and spewed against God fell upon him. See, so he's given us the example of not just doing his job and then picking up our slack. He's actually doing his job and then picking up our offenses towards him and bearing them. That's what he's doing. He's doing it for the people who were powerless. Remember, without strength, that it was impossible for them, that they didn't have the ability to do it? Because they're lacking faith? If we ever struggle with doing that, do you know what we need to go do? We need to go look in the mirror to find the number one person in our lives who did that to God. Because the person looking back at you in the mirror didn't have faith, reproached the Lord, didn't have the ability to get themselves out of it, and Jesus Christ came and heaped your sin upon himself because you didn't have the ability to handle it. And neither did I. So my point is, you know what we get to do? We get to be like Christ. And for a lot of folks, people love the, we get to be like Christ. We've got the power of Christ living in us to overcome. We've got the power of Christ in us. We're glorified. We're going to live forever with him. All of this great stuff. You know what else we get to do? And let's just get just as pumped about this as the other stuff. We get to suffer like him. We get to go the extra mile like him. We get to take people's insults and lack of faith and heave them up onto our shoulders and carry them for them. That's what we get to do. Isn't that awesome? That's wonderful. It's wonderful if you want to be like Christ, because let's head over to Hebrews chapter 5 for a second. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7. In the days of his flesh, he offered up both prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears to the one able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his piety. There's a lot of times we don't think of Christ in this capacity. We see him in the Gospels as this, you know, face like flint, and he's facing the adversaries, and he's so strong. Do we think of in the days of his flesh, that this wasn't just one night in the garden? I don't know how old Jesus was before when he realized that he was going to have to die the death that he was going to die and carry the sins of the world. But I'm pretty sure it was pretty young. Can you imagine the way that would mess with your mind? The way that that would weigh on you. Every time from the time he was young, walking by someone who was being crucified, recognizing that that was his destiny. And he knew exactly when it was going to happen. Prayers and supplications with loud crying and tears. This happened more than once. And he was heard because of his holiness, because of his righteousness, because of his character. You want confidence that your prayers are going to be answered? Walk in the path of Jesus Christ and you'll know that your prayers are being answered. But then notice what he says in verse 8. Although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things that he suffered. Having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation, being designated by God as a high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. The reproaches of those who reproached you fell upon me. Christ suffered not just on the cross, but he suffered his whole life, carrying the burden of the people that insulted him, carrying the sin of all of mankind on the cross. What kind of a practical result did that have in his life? Was it pretty good? Yeah. So for us to recognize that we've been called for the same purpose. Let's head over to 1 Peter chapter 4 for a second. I'm sorry, chapter 2. Nope, chapter 4. Keeping you on your toes. I could go to chapter 2, but chapter 4 says it more specifically the way that I want it. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1. He says, therefore, since Christ also suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also for the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. Notice he says cease from sin. A lot of people think that that happens when you die. Notice what it says. It's not about that. It's about time that you have right now. Because it says, he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. That's something that happens now, or can happen now. Again, but what do you need in order to make that happen? Faith. My point is, the same process that Jesus went through is the same process we go through if we want to be like him. And that is what every Christian has been predestined to be conformed to, is that image. That's clear from Romans chapter 8. We have been predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. Here in the flesh, and later on in the spirit, in the resurrection. Well, I guess that's mind, or body, soul, spirit, all combined into one. It might seem unfair at first glance. It might. That's why Paul wrote verse 3. Because he He's not asking us to do anything that Jesus Christ didn't do. It just all depends on what we want. And that Christianity boils back down to that all the time, doesn't it? This isn't force. This isn't something that God zaps you and makes you do. It all boils back down to what do we want. And hopefully, we want to be like Him. And if we get to be like Him, we get to carry the weaknesses of each other when we're lacking in faith, when something's impossible for us, when we don't have the ability. And it's not, let me clarify something also. It's not just somebody who maybe refuses to build faith. It just might be somebody who hasn't grown in faith yet. And they just don't have the ability to do something at that particular point. We're here to help because somebody helped us. Somebody did that for us. And maybe we can't think of anybody that did that for us. And if we can't, I feel bad about that. However, Christ did do it for us, and that's for sure. And now that same Jesus Christ is asking us to pay it forward, to do it for somebody else. Because if we can't maybe think of someone who did that for us, we need to right that wrong and make sure that the next spiritual generation coming up doesn't go through that. We're here to strengthen and to help each other. The exact same way Jesus Christ did. And sometimes that means working with folks that maybe just lack a little bit of faith. And we're there to help them build it. So let's do that.